Welcome to the SportsTech Research Podcast. We connect research-driven professionals working within the sports technology ecosystem. The show is brought to you by STRN, SportsTech Research Network. Your host for today is Christophe de Meij.
Hi, welcome everybody, and thanks for listening. This is another episode of the SportsTech Research Podcast. Still Christophe de Meij here, I'm your host. And today I have the pleasure to speak with Ben Smith, Head of International Business at Breakaway Data. And actually on my second screen here, I could actually read what he has been doing in the past. But as always, it's more interesting to have the person himself or herself explaining a little bit what they do. So Ben, thanks for joining us. And yeah, feel free to introduce yourself.
Thanks, Christophe. And thanks for inviting me on. Yeah, great to be able to talk to you and share some bits with your audience. Yeah, so I've recently joined Breakaway Data. Prior to Breakaway, I spent just over 15 years at Chelsea Football Club, where I was one of the first performance analysis guys. I was very fortunate when I was doing a master's at Brunel University that performance analysis was something I was recommended to do as a second skill, because I was actually on a psychology master's, and the lecturer came in. I remember it was my second day, and he was like, "There are no jobs in sports psychology. You better get some secondary skills straight away." And I was thinking, oh my God, there's like 50 of us on this course for two jobs nationally. And I'm thinking, oh no. And so he goes on to tell some great stories about how he supported the Paralympic teams as a performance analyst. And I've never needed to be hugely original. I was like, well, that's a good idea. I'll just learn that as a secondary skill. So I was very fortunate to be able to then do some work with Fulham Football Club, where I kind of learned all about performance analysis. And one of the coaches that I worked with there was headhunted by Chelsea. Chelsea didn't have anything like that in place. And so I was then invited to go over to Chelsea, and I kind of set up a department and, you know, put an entire program in place there. Thankfully for me, with the growth of professional sport and Chelsea specifically as a club, I was able to go through three stages of my career without having to change organizations. So I did performance analysis in my first stretch, and then as technology and systems became increasingly important across professional sports, I was kind of like by default like the most qualified in the room. So I then sort of started leading across systems, technology, and data. It was fantastic. I did sort of 4 years or so really around strategic implements of different AMSs and different tools and why we're doing whatever we're doing. The last 3.5 years at Chelsea, I moved into a slightly broader role again around research and innovation, which is really around how we're adding value in terms of solving unknown problems, how we're taking solutions external, how we're implementing them, how are we kind of maintaining our competitive advantage. So it's a very, very broad role and quite difficult to talk about specific details, because it's really around how do you make the organization be more effective at what it's already good at, or how do you improve some of those weaknesses? So that, and it's based on what our current strategic priorities are and all that sort of stuff. So it was great to be able to get my hands into any and all areas of performance in the club, because it was really around what's going to be useful to us. How do we improve what we do? So I was very fortunate to be able to work across a huge diverse range of things within the club, including a crossover into some of the commercial arms of the club as well, where I always felt there's a brilliant opportunity, mostly untapped in clubs, the crossover between commercial and performance. You're going, those are brilliant performance stories that have got such a commercial value, but the commercial team don't know how to tap into that. So, I had a brilliant time at Chelsea, but that's kind of a broad range of what I was doing.
Awesome. I think we could do a separate podcast, I can imagine, or maybe a dozen of those related to your work at Chelsea. But we're going to stick a bit here today to the Breakaway Data work that you have been doing. And as you may know, and our listeners know, of course, we also try to focus a little bit on the research and innovation side of things. How did you then end up at Breakaway Data? And maybe basic information for the listeners, like what is Breakaway Data, and then we can continue from there. Maybe you can talk a little bit about those questions.
Yeah, sure. So I met one of the founders of Breakaway while I was working at Chelsea, someone I'd met kind of within the professional circuit, immediately liked personally, really respected his work. And, you know, we developed a good personal friendship, and you know, he came over and did a range of consulting with Chelsea and helping us progress in some pretty important tech areas. And we'd kind of long said, look, it'd be great to work together somewhere down the line. You know, when an opportunity comes up, it would be great to be
Nice.
able to do that. And so he found a Breakaway just over 2 years ago, and he's like, look, I'd love it if you'd come and, you know, run Europe for me. And I, you know, I've got two children, they're now 8 and 10, but it was like I can go from the safety of, you know, a wonderful world-leading job at Chelsea into a brilliant but chaotic startup world, of which my wife took a little bit of convincing, but eventually I managed to tell her about the opportunity and hide some of the risk. And so, you know, I left Chelsea at the end of last year to join Breakaway because I think the opportunity around player data is it's a time-specific one. And so, you know, this, I think if you're lucky in your career, you get one, two, maybe three, if you're really lucky, opportunities to do something big. And this for me was a great op big opportunity, big challenge, but big opportunity. And so coming along was like, you know, really wanted to get hold of it. So that kind of brings on to what Breakaway does then.
Yeah, exactly. So interesting, a little bit deep dive a bit into what Breakaway does, and maybe you can explain where it actually comes from. Player data ownership, privacy, I think are key terms. But what always interesting to hear was the story behind and where is the company at this
Yeah.
moment in time.
So the company was actually founded as a sports consultancy, really, around, you know, like lots of different agencies, part analytics, part technology. It's a crowded space, and as Dave and Steve, the two founders, were kind of setting everything up, they came across the same problem in the first three engagements they had, which was really around there being no mechanism for players to be able to kind of engage with their data. And so they quite quickly pivoted the business from a general consultancy into going, you know what, we need to build a specific tool to help players access and control their data. Because if you think of, you know, club training data, you know, some of that's loading, some of it's testing, there's match data, there's personal wearables, there's health and wellness, all of that sits in very dispersed environments. It's almost none of it is controlled by the player, and if you're in a good environment, you get to see some of it, but it's certainly not systematic, and it's not something you really have any control over. And so what Breakaway does is allows an athlete to aggregate, collect, and then control all of that data. They don't own it because ownership's a bit of a grey term. Ownership really is important when it comes to commercializing data. If you're an athlete, if you can access and control your data, you can get all the performance value you need from it. But when you own it, then you can do what you want with it, including selling it. So yeah, we allow athletes to come in, get all that data, and importantly, to be able to then share that with whoever they want. And so if you're an athlete that, you know, plays on the Belgian national team, and then you're at Chelsea Football Club and you've got your own private support team, those are separate, distinct buckets of data, which if you're very lucky, sometimes cross, but mostly as you move from one environment to the next, the data is sort of left in that previous environment. And so you're moving in, you know, from place to place, transitioning often, in training programs as well, and yet the data and support you've had doesn't follow you. And so, you know, the practitioners are making educated guesses, but they're guesses about what you have done. They ask you, how hard did you work? Oh, it was a hard training session yesterday. So they go, all right, well, I guess we'll kind of do this about it. But actually, you know, with a proper data oversight, you can make evidence-based judgments of what needs to happen. So that's what happens when a player can access and control their data. They can share it with all the people around them so they can make better decisions on how to support that player.
Yeah. And without going into nitty-gritty of things, but what is that requiring then on the technical level, and how it's different to classic athlete management systems, for example?
Yeah, so an athlete management system is club owned and sort of then fed down. And so, you know, there are some clubs that do a great job of supplying athletes with data whilst they're in their care. But when that player leaves the club, the data sort of then stays with the club. Whereas we are a bottom-up athlete license system. And so an athlete, as they move from academy to first team, or they move from Ajax to Chelsea, or that club, that information stays with them. They have a performance passport through the span of their career and beyond that they control, irrelevant of where they are. And the one thing that enables that is GDPR. And so the legal right of an individual to access information about themselves, that gives them the ability to harvest the information in, and then once it's kind of stored in the database, we're then a library for the athlete to have that for as long as they want.
And did that require a lot of R&D, or was it mainly building that tool and trying to find the right go-to-market strategy? Or how risky was it to set things up, let's say?
Yeah, there's a level of technical skill required. However, it's largely kind of setting up APIs. I think the bigger challenge is really around stakeholder management and, you know, working with a very diverse range of data suppliers and bringing them to the table so that there's added benefit for everyone. You know, if you set up a system where players win but clubs lose and data suppliers lose, they're not going to play ball, basically. They'll do the minimum and they'll make it too hard, and so you won't actually get a good solution. But if you set a principle where actually everybody can win and they're all incentivized to really, you know, deliver the best possible solution. So that's what I think the biggest skill is, creating a system where there's value for all the stakeholders.
Mm-hmm. And you started to implement this in football first, is that correct?
Yeah, American football first, actually. So the founder, Dave, was a wide receiver in the NFL, and the other founder was a coach in the NFL, amongst a range of other things. So their contact and network across American football is obviously unbelievable. So we launched American football, very quickly followed by NBA, as we had an investor, Chris Paul, who's one of one of the legends of the game over there. He saw what we did, really liked it, and asked if he could invest. And so we pivoted and went, well, NBA is now as important as American football. But quite quickly realized that, you know, for a first mover advantage, you know, European football, as the American guys make me call it, because it gets too confusing if we call everything football. But European football then, you know, such a huge market that you don't want someone else to come in and start being able to offer a really competitive service to players in this space. So those are the sports we launched at, but we've expanded into tennis, cricket, and baseball, with a range of other sports sort of still to come.
And then we touched upon the importance of stakeholder management. Also now in our discussion here, we're talking about player level, team level, league level. Where do you find the most traction within those sports?
Yeah, I mean, when I look at it, there's really clear value at each level. However, being completely transparent, the individual athletes and the league level have recognized the value, or maybe just seen the least amount of threat. Teams understand there's value, but it's quite disruptive to a team to choose to give that much control to athletes. And so, you know, certainly football teams are a little bit unsettled by that at the moment and are kind of waiting to see how it looks and pans out in all the other sports before they kind of take a step forward. But individual athletes love the idea that they get to control their data, they get to get benefit from it, and they get more value from it. And on a league and NGB level, there's part ethics and governance, which is, it's the right thing to do and it's taking your sport forward. And part of it is keeping, you know, your main elite players happy. And so, you know, the North American sports are leading the way about systematically deciding to share data with players as league level solutions, but quite quickly followed by a number of, you know, really forward thinking sports that recognize, you know, not just because of the legal structures, but actually this is a way to improve the quality of individual athletes, aggregate, improve the whole sport, and open some quite interesting commercial doors to fan engagement, broadcast, all that sort of stuff.
Yeah, because I was also thinking, like, which data are we actually talking about, right? Because also in that sense, you have, of course, the raw data, processed data, aggregated data, all the way into making conclusions based on all of that information. Where is Breakaway Data positioned within that spectrum?
Yeah, so we aggregate headline data typically. So if you're talking like Catapult and StatSports, it would be your summary data, your total number of XLs, DCLs, your high intensity distance, that kind of information that actually has value and meaning to an athlete. The raw data is difficult for an individual to get value from.
Yeah, exactly.
It needs to be processed. But when you provide that headline level data, then you can quite quickly go, great, I can see my headline training data. I can see my headline data coming from Aura or Whoop or whatever it is around my HRV and my sleep. I can start to draw relationships between how does that increase, decrease, or stability in my training load impact when I sleep better, worse, or you know, when I do this kind of stretching, and all these different performance routines and habits, they have a data signature, you know, either by objective data or subjective. And then an athlete can start to explore what are the relationships between these different performance domains and how does that ultimately come together on a match day? How do I be a better performer when it really counts?
Yeah, interesting. And then we also touch upon the research topic, like the within the team type of research or academic research. Have you seen interests from that type of people and environments as well?
Yeah, I think there's two strands to that. The first is, you know, within a team, when you start to have an aggregate level of data that includes all of the different environments an athlete performs in, and also the, you know, personal wearable data and things that are quite hard to collect for a team now, you can have a level of visibility of your athlete that can trigger some really good applied performance questions. Quite practical things. You're like, oh, great, we can get into it now with really good clarity and I suppose reliability. But on a slightly wider sort of academic level, if you think of, you know, at the moment we've got, I think, about 7,500 athletes on platform. You know, by the end of the year, we would hope to be about 25,000, and in a couple of years, 100,000, 200,000, whatever. If you say 200,000 of the world's most elite athletes across all those sports, and you're talking about an aggregated data set across health, well-being, activity, performance, there's no end of really cool things you can start to look at. And we work with a number of different player associations, when, you know, the PFA would be a good example, where they're constantly interested in, okay, what are our players' workloads? You know, how far are they traveling? What are the things we need to do to protect and help our players? Whereas another NGB like the ATP, okay, how do we maximize our gains program? You know, part of that is, where do we need to come off? Because actually we're pushing our players too far. Part of it is, where can we put more games in? Because actually there's an opportunity to do more with our players.
Right.
And with that kind of data oversight of, you know, how does this kind of demand impact the game in terms of injury and, you know, play styles, all that sort of stuff, there's a huge opportunity on an aggregate level to do some really cool things.
Yeah, exactly. And then I can imagine with a company as Breakaway and that focus on player data, trust is really important. So how do you manage that then? Because, of course, as you were just explaining, once you have access to all of that information, other people, of course, can build knowledge and insights on top of it. On the other hand, you want to maintain the trust from the athlete that they give consent. I don't know how it really works, that data can be used indeed for those type of analysis.
Yeah, so it's a great question and a really important one, because, you know, if the athlete loses trust in this system, it all falls apart.
Exactly.
So, you know, it's really built on the fact that an athlete is the license holder and has complete control over what they share and what they don't share, what they opt into, what they don't opt into. And so I think that the skill of a really good aggregate level research question is showing the athlete the value to them of opting in. You know, if you're part of this is what you receive as an athlete. You know, if you are an English football player, these are the reasons why you would allow the PFA to look at this data, because we're going to help you here and here. It's a value exchange of why you allowing us to look at your data, even in an anonymized way, is going to help you. And I think that's a fair way to treat athletes, as opposed to just saying, okay, we've got your data, so we're going to monetize it. We're going to get these things right, and you actually don't know about it.
Okay. So part of the storyline is that you bring extra value because people are giving access to their data. Interesting. Yeah.
Well, if we allow the athlete to one opt in, one opt in or out, but actually on an individual level. So an athlete, there's a good story. You know, footballers are really worried about their sleep data. They're not worried about whether they get enough sleep or not. They're worried about sharing their sleep data with other people because they can see when I've been out late. We allow an athlete to go, okay, I won't share my sleep data with my national team, my club, but I will share my HRV. And so on an individual level, they can choose stakeholders and variables that they do and don't want to share. So that gives the athlete a real granular level control to how they want to sort of be perceived and share that data around.
Sounds great. I want to switch a little bit to another topic, and that's also a bit the focus of the podcast, focusing on the research and innovation side for our listeners, and maybe they can then find answers or get in touch with you if they think it's relevant. But could you talk a little bit about what are the current challenges of the company? And that could be on the technical level, it could be on the implementation level, it could be on the data level. Like, could you share challenges that the company is now working on, and maybe there are other people around the world that have expertise and might help to some extent?
Yeah, I mean, I think an area that we're all excited about in research at the moment is AI. You know, and so where you're looking at these aggregated data sets, and you know, the first thing is allowing an athlete to have access, control, and make meaning of that. And you know, that most athletes are becoming increasingly effective about, you know, selecting what's of value to them, what's going to be useful. But it's a push to say they can do that at a level that incorporates five or six different data sets and looks at really complex relationships. And so, you know, I think the opportunity with AI is to be able to start to understand some quite complex relationships that are unique to each individual athlete, that you don't need to be prescriptive about and tell an athlete this is good, this is bad. But it's like, have you noticed these things? You know, we're starting to build in some LLM AI tools within our system so that you can start to flag, like, okay, what does your good week look like? What are the habits that help you do that? And that's entirely possible without any AI for a really focused athlete who's really clear about what they're trying to do. But AI in this instance has a really good option to support and nudge and kind of create prompts to help an athlete get this either quicker or more effectively. So I think there's a way of using AI that can still maintains complete control with the athlete or with the team or, you know, with the existing stakeholder management structure, but helps you appreciate, learn, and kind of get to your final point quicker. I think that's really exciting, and you know, I'd love to hear from anyone that can help tie in really complex disparate data sets in a way that still maintains control from an athlete, so that, you know, it doesn't turn into that this is good, that's bad, and this is why you should do X, Y, and Z, because I don't think people want that from a computer telling them how to be an elite performer. And I don't think that's realistic, because I don't think it's anywhere near sophisticated enough for that yet. But it would be great to have more insights and learnings from very complex data sets.
Curious to see in a couple of weeks or months how many AI in sports people reach out to you to tell you about their expertise. What's the typical way of approaching this? Of course, every growing company is hiring people. Are you also involved in particular bilateral projects or other types of university industry partnerships? Or what's on the roadmap, let's say, for you and Breakaway in terms of setting up these collaborations and bringing that knowledge in?
Yeah, well, I think, you know, first and foremost, it's quite pragmatic from a Breakaway point of view. Yeah. You know, you don't have to I suppose, have the most complex support structures to be able to implement simple, useful AI things with an app. And that's what we're doing, just quite a common sense approach now, and really getting quite a lot of user feedback, because this is a brand new area for everyone in elite sport, and just jumping into it to the nth degree is even if it's the right thing to do, would scare the bejesus out of everyone. So slowly, slowly. Yeah.
You can quickly lose yourself in all the details and all the R&D, indeed. Yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, on an individual level, I'm very fortunate to have a very strong academic research network through my time at Chelsea, working with Loughborough University, and the work that I was doing with their London campus was, you know, almost exclusively on computer vision, AI, and some really cool, quite advanced decision-making structures across football. And so very fortunate to have a group of world-leading academics that I kind of try and learn from, try and engage with, and try and kind of keep ahead of what might be 2-3 steps down the road for us at Breakaway. When they tell me, I kind of basically hold on and try and concentrate really hard. I'm like, keep up with them, try and get where they're going. Because the super brainy guys, they're not sports people at all, and they don't pretend to be sports people. Yeah. So they just talk, and I'm like, wow, gotta try my hardest to take it all in, and then translate it and think, okay, what would the opportunities be here in my environment, and then how would you plot that out over 6, 12, 24 months? And it's not that I'm attached to what I know is going to happen in 24 months, but I want to have a range of options so that as we take the next step, I've got 2 or 3 viable options that I think would all take us forward. And then as we take another step, I've got 2 or 3 that might be 1 new, 2 the same. And so, you know, at every stage, we've got a good range of things that could and should help progress what we're doing, but we do that in tandem with our players, with our stakeholders, with all those people, so that everybody is comfortable with the rate of change we go through, and, you know, we're keeping athletes at the center of how we support people.
Yeah. Looking at the next 6 to 12 months, like what's next? Are you, let's say, also focusing on other than pure performance topics? I can imagine the injury prevention side is also something that you are focusing on a lot. Are you trying to enter into new sports? Like, what's next?
Yeah, well, I think there's some new sports where golf and tennis are particularly well suited to what we do, because you've got athletes who are constantly hopping around the globe, you know, in cricket sense, moving from franchise to franchise, and in golf sense, they're kind of often in a different continent from their support teams. And so a digital support structure like ours is an excellent way of kind of tying everyone together and giving the athlete a really strong sense of ownership and control within that. So there'll definitely be BD into new sports. We want to establish what we do in existing sports, so that actually we're not some new sort of innovative disruptive technology that is kind of, oh, it's interesting, but I'm not quite sure where that's going to go. So we want to be established an established part of the performance ecosystem, that stakeholders understand what we are, what we're not, and, you know, whether they work with us or not, they're not scared of us, because, you know, there's some people now which are kind of worried. You know, it's very new, and so I totally understand that. So we want to build those relationships, help people understand, and kind of demystify some of what that is. So I think, you know, there's not a huge amount of inspirational things we're trying to do in the next year. It's the common sense things, you know, the common sense things, so that in 5 years' time, when we are successful as we want to be, you've earned that right to do it. We're not trying to blaze everyone away with how intelligent we are. We're trying to do something that is like, oh, I can't believe no one's done that before. I kind of like, why has no one done that before? That's so obvious that players should have that. And we're not actually doing anything incredibly profoundly intelligent. We're doing a whole range of common sense things that offer value to everyone. So we want it to feel normal and to be, you know, an established part of the performance ecosystem.
Yeah, I think that's a really smart way to approach things. I think within sports, yeah, you need a lot of pragmatism, I would say, and I hear this is really in the DNA of the company. Yeah. All right. We're almost finishing up. Is there anything else, Ben, you would like to stress or like to mention? One thing maybe that I should have asked in the beginning is, what's the business model? Who is actually paying for this solution? Is it the athlete, the team, the league? Is it still finding out, depending on use cases, sports, regions, countries, etc.?
Yeah, so largely we are free to use for an elite athlete. If you come and work with us and you are a Premier League footballer, it's completely free for you to come on app, to be able to bring your data in and to be able to house it with us. However, if you are a body, a team or an NGB or someone that wants to get value from the access of that data, then you're paying us. You're paying us and you're kind of using our services to be able to draw information from all these different places and pull it together to get value and insights. So that way we can support the player in what we think ethically is the right thing to do. And the organizations that are getting value from that on a sort of collective level are happy to pay because of the value they get. And so that may well be a league deciding, okay, we actually want data distribution to all our players. So all the players are getting the app free, but the league is paying annual license fee to be able to do that. But they then have an ability to look at certain aggregated data sets and get value from that as well. So that's, I'm not trying to be shady, but it looks different from whoever we're working with as to who's paying. But it's largely, if you're getting value, then you're paying us, unless you're an athlete, and then you're free.
Makes sense. And now I'm jumping back to my previous question. You were, I think, about to say something, but feel free to add anything you would like to add in our conversation. Yeah.
I mean, we'd love to hear from interesting individuals that are doing cool innovative work, whether that is something that can add value in the short term to our model, because we are in effect a portal or a performance portal that takes disparate information and gives it to an athlete that adds value to them. And that could be psychological information, it could be tracking, physical, whatever is of value to the athlete, we kind of bring in and showcase to them. And so there's a myriad of cool ways you can start to add value to that data, or there's new things you can add. We'd be delighted to chat with anyone who feels they can offer a higher quality experience to our athletes through a process or a new data source. That way we can grow and we can help those individuals kind of showcase the value they offer to athletes as well. So we're always open for those discussions.
Perfect. And that's a clear, nice call to action, I would say, to end the conversation. Yeah, cool. Thanks, Ben, for joining us. As you may have seen in our preparations, I always like to end with a bit of a different question. In this case, it's, who is your most inspiring scientist and why is that?
Yeah. So when I saw that question, I was a bit like, oh, goodness me. I don't know loads of scientists. Yeah. And then I was like, actually, only last week
we had a Nobel Prize winner or something.
Well, we had a really interesting conversation when we're talking about launching our AI. And we're like, okay, what are we going to call our AI? We're like, I don't know. You've got to have a cool name, haven't you? In your phone, what the thing. And so we're going through a range of different things. And I learned about Ada Lovelace. Because Ada was one of our options. So she was a mathematician and writer. She kind of created the analytical engine and is kind of the founding mother of data science, and was this incredible woman who kind of has laid so much of the groundwork for what we do now, kind of inspiration of Alan Turing. And I was like, wow, she's a badass. So when I saw that question, I was like, yeah, I think she's someone on a personal and intelligence level that I'd implore anyone to go and learn a bit more about.
Well, yeah, great. And then I need to learn more about her as well, I guess. I know the name, I know a bit what she did, but nothing special. So we'll add it in the show notes for sure. Maybe if you can send the link or whatever, probably we'll find some more information on the internet ourselves as well.
Yeah, great stuff.
With that, Ben, thanks again for joining us. Great work. And yeah, curious myself to see what will be happening with the Breakaway in the next months. And sure, a lot of our listeners will be curious to follow your journey and see what's out there in the next weeks and months. Thanks again for joining us. To all of the people listening, of course, thanks to you as well. Feel free to leave a comment. As always, I think all hosts of a podcast end with click and like and share and so on. So feel free to do so. We also working on, or started to work actually, initial steps towards our next summit, which will be a physical summit in September next year. So feel free to reach out if you have particular ideas or want to partner up. And in the meantime, yeah, if you have suggestions for other people that I should interview here in this podcast, feel free to reach out as well. With that, I want to end. Thanks again, everyone. And yeah, see you next time. Bye-bye.
This was a SportsTech Research Podcast. Podcast presented to you by STRN, an initiative of Ghent University. Did you like this episode? Make sure to check out our website, strn.co, and let's get in touch.